streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
What's going on? Welcome to Canel and Bell on this Tuesday. It's not Wednesday. It feels a little bit like hump day, like kind of getting over it. I was traveling. I didn't get home last night till 1:30 a.m.
Yeah.
Kind of just when your sleep schedule is thrown off that bad, it throws you for a loop.
It's tough.
You're going to have to carry me today.
I got four kids. and we had a lot of homework last night.
So ooh.
You're on your own, sir.
All right. Are you getting to that point? So your kids are almost the same ages as mine. So fifth, sixth, seventh grade, right in there. Where the homework is getting much more challenging.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And I want to be that involved dad, but sometimes my daughter will be like, what? And I'm like, you do it. Doesn't your teacher explain how to do it? And she's like, no, she didn't explain it. I'm like, well, I don't know how to do this. Dude,
biggest pet peeve of mine. Like, any teachers that listen to this show, tell me if this is incorrect. Don't send a damn thing home with my son that you haven't taught him.
Right.
That's what homework is for. It's to make sure that you know and can complete tasks that you've been taught in school. Don't send that junk home for me to teach.
Right. Now, there is a slim chance, at least in my family.
Hell, don't send that.
Well, no, there is a chance in my family that my daughter might have been talking to somebody else while that lesson was being taught.
Fair enough.
So maybe that's the case too. But yeah, don't send it home unless you've taught them first. All right. Big show we got to get to. I did want to touch just a sliver on the World Series, and not to get a breakdown on it, because we don't do a ton of baseball, but Justin Verlander takes the mound for the Astros as the Astros try to get the win. It'd be two out of the last three World Series. Verlander is a guy, and it happens in all sports. He has a jinx, hex, inability, lack of clutch gene to get it done in the World Series. Unbelievable in a lot of postseason games.
Yeah,
unbelievable
first round.
You know, a lot of the regular season, one of the most dominant pitchers. He's 0 for the World Series as far as getting a win.
Yeah.
He's 0 for. What do you chalk that up to? Is it a real thing? Do you think it's in his head? I think sometimes Clayton Kershaw.
How many times has he pitched? Well, Clayton Kershaw's different. Clayton Kershaw's had no success in the playoffs. I mean, relatively speaking, right?
Right.
This guy's had success in the playoffs, just hasn't really translated in World Series games.
Right.
Can't be that huge of a sample size for World Series appearances for him. So, how many games?
0 for 5. That's starting to become a problem when you look at it. It's just. For me, I think sometimes it's bad luck. Like, you know, I don't think he's not clutch because I think he is.
Right.
You go out there in critical situations in other postseason games. Sometimes it's the luck of the draw. From a fan perspective, I don't like that narrative when they say guys aren't clutch because they're competing at the highest level.
Sure.
Like, I hope he gets there. I don't know. It's just kind of a side note in that game.
You know how you make that all go away?
You win.
You go away.
Same thing with Kirk Cousins.
That's right.
Like, it drives me nuts about Kirk Cousins. Can't win the big game. You got to go win the big game if you want to get there. All right. Monday night. I was trying to delay a little bit to stay away from the Monday night football game because that was really the only thing that was on last night. We will get some NBA later. But the Dolphins looked like they were going to get their first win of the season. It was 14-0. And you're thinking, oh my goodness, they're going to do this. They're going to ruin the tank job. Nope. They find a way.
Nope.
Crazy how we talk about them.
Crazy.
Like, they found a way. Are we supposed to celebrate them staying winless? It feels like it. Absolutely.
Cause that was clearly their objective.
Right.
Like, I was sitting there in the gym. We had a workout with the basketball team last night. One of my assistant coaches was like, Dolphins are up 7-0. I'm like, what? Then he was like, they're up 14-0. I'm like, this can't happen. Like, someone is going to step in and steer them towards a loss because they can't ruin this, right? Like, you're all in now. You have to be 0-7 after this game. And lo and behold, we have what kind of blitz was that?
So it was a zero blitz. It was 3rd and 22 around the 45-yard line. And you were saying someone takes it in their control. It's probably the defensive coordinator at that point. I don't know if it comes from Brian Flores, the head coach.
Listen, man.
3rd and 22, almost 99.9% of the time, a team is going to play prevent, keep everybody in front of you and tackle. Instead, they bring the house.
The whole house.
They bring the whole house.
The whole house.
And then their defensive backs are kind of playing off.
Listen.
It's about as easy as a completion as you'll get, man.
I would have bet you every amount of money that I had ever earned, right? That in a tanking situation, there was two sets of opinions. One had by the front office and the owners, we're going to tank.
Yeah.
But players and coaches would never go out there and tank. Like, my livelihood as a player is on the line. My job, like, while they may be tanking, and they may have stripped us of all the talent we can have. Whatever talent we have, we're still going out there and trying to win games. I questioned it last night.
That it may be the coaches.
I questioned that the coaches and were maybe involved in this situation.
I know.
Like I've never seen anything like that.
I haven't either. And I would love to see, because in basketball it's different. I just think it's a different animal. And I think tanking can be more effective in basketball, because if you get that one player, it can make a difference. And I think it's easier to judge talent in basketball. You can see a guy who's clearly there. And I don't know what the hit rate. I mean, there have been busts in the NBA, clearly. But when you're at a 50-50 just on the quarterback alone, that to me isn't worth throwing away complete seasons the way they're trying to do. But I would love to see one day a documentary about what the conversations are like in that locker room on a daily basis. Like, are the players joking about it? Like, hey, yeah, they want us to suck.
Yeah.
Like, is that what the players
are
saying?
Danny, like, think about this week.
I don't know how you would do that.
Think about the week, though. Like, you got Kenyon Drake, right?
Right.
You're going up against the Steelers, right? You got Mason Rudolph coming off of a concussion. They don't look great. You're like, we might be getting too close to this damn win. Get rid of Kenyon Drake. All right, get rid of Kenyon Drake. And you're like, oh, damn, we're sitting here up 14-0. Brian Flores, let me talk to you real quick, bro.
Let's send the house 3rd and 22.
That's just crazy.
I don't know. I honestly don't know what that dynamic is like. Hopefully we'll get to see it. Some days these players will start talking, tell their story.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even like Ryan Fitzpatrick, like when they switched out from Josh Rosen, they said, we want to give us a better chance to win. But they really don't. And they had the two-point play in that game, and it was a bad design. It's like, is that another one they were trying to tank? I don't know what that dynamic would be like.
What is the corner? I think he's a corner. He's the only, like, player. Is it Xavien Howard? Is he a corner or safety?
I think he is a corner.
Corner.
Yeah.
He's a good young player by most accounts, right?
He's gone. He's gone before long.
He's got to be gone, right?
Well, even like, I saw some people saying last night, because Fitzpatrick is playing pretty good, that they should shop him. Like, if you're the Chicago Bears, Mitchell Trubisky's playing bad, why not bring in Fitzpatrick and see if you can get some Fitz magic and on a good team? Or, you know, I know the Bears aren't good, but that could maybe salvage their
season. Why not? I guess I'm saying you're not even trying to hide it now. Like I said yesterday, you're just rubbing everyone's nose in it. Like, you're essentially making a mockery out of this. The NFL's already co-signed on, like, they don't really have a problem with it. Like, I don't know, was it 3 or 4 weeks ago? They had said, like, it doesn't seem to be, you know, out of the norm of what we expect NFL franchises. Okay, fine. So if you can do that, why not get rid of anything that could help you right now?
And that should be their mentality. But I just can't comprehend. I was on bad teams and it sucked. Like, I wonder if these players are like, who cares? Like, why game plan? Why put it, like, do guys just come in, check in at 9? Like, don't show up early. Like, you study extra film.
Well,
I don't know.
Here's the thing, though. Like, a Xavien Howard, like, maybe not. Like, the league knows who you are. Maybe you are checked out. Maybe a Minkah Fitzpatrick, their high first round draft pick, is checked out. But all of these guys that litter the Dolphins roster that wouldn't ordinarily probably make a roster.
Right.
They have to be treating it like the best pros they can be. This might be their one shot at it. You know
I was
mean?
Never on a team. I was on some bad teams, never on a team that was tanking. Joey has some experience being part of an organization, one of the worst NBA teams of all time. What was the discussion like? Whether it was front office or players around that season where there was just 7 wins in the NBA.
Look, there was no joking. It was misery. I mean, and the thing is it's got to be different in the NFL, I'm sure, because there's 53 guys. But I can tell you, and just piggybacking a little bit off what Raja was saying, these guys, for the most part on that team, they came into the season, they pretty much knew what the deal was. And it's extremely frustrating for them because most of those guys that were on that team were playing for their lives. And they weren't good players yet. Most of them weren't even good players yet. They were trying to become legitimate pros in the NBA and have a chance to play. And when you get that stench of bad on you, I mean, it happened to me a little bit as a video guy in the NBA. I was the video guy for the worst team in the NBA. Who wants that guy coaching their team? You know what I mean?
Right.
And so it was misery for them. The coaches, that year was Paul Silas. He was a little older. Everyone knew he wasn't going to be around very long. But those assistant coaches, most of them are not coaching in the NBA anymore, other than his son, who's still around, who's a great coach. But the other guys are gone. Like, it's just a bad feeling, and everyone knows it, and it's just misery.
Yeah, that's where I was like, I don't know. And I saw Fitzpatrick walking out to the field. They had, like, the camera shot of him taking the field. And he was kind of – he had a smile on his face. He's like, let's go. Like, he said something. I guess the game day, you kind of feel like you have a chance every week. I just, it's such a different mindset. I can't understand. And I would love to hear what the players are thinking on a daily basis, not on game day, but on a daily basis, what they'd be thinking. Yesterday, we talked about Joe Flacco.
Yeah.
He came out after their game, criticized the coaches, criticized the play calling, said, why are we being conservative? We're 2-6. I don't get the mindset. I thought he was pretty – it was probably the most outspoken. You've seen Joe Flacco. Yes. He's always been reserved,
I've ever heard him
you know,
speak.
Kind of buttoned up, doesn't give you much opinions. He goes out there. All of a sudden, within 24 hours, we have a new starter for the Denver Broncos at quarterback because they have made the switch to Brandon Allen. Apparently, Joe Flacco has a neck injury. It's related to a herniated disc. He will be reevaluated during the bye week. He could potentially be placed on IR.
Are you buying
the disc issue, or do you think this is the coaches saying, oh, really? You want to criticize us? Take a seat on the bench.
No, I don't know how they would get away with that because I think you'd have Joe Flacco at a microphone this morning being like, no herniated disc. I'm fine. Like, I mean, you could bench me, but I'm not going to let you hide behind a herniated disc. I think it's Joe Flacco saying, hey, look, man, this is where we're at.
Right.
This is where this team is at. Look at my bank account. I've got a Super Bowl ring. I've been playing a little hurt. Guess what? I've now got a herniated disc. And I'm checking out. Right? That's the only way that works. Otherwise, I mean, I'll tell you what I would have done. If you try to demote me by telling me or telling the world that I had a fake injury, I'm going to be at a press conference 2 minutes later saying, I want to make this clear. I do not have an injury. I want to play. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how you get away with doing that.
Yeah, my initial thought was the coaches, this was a response to them. But you bring up a really good point because Flacco would say if he's just outspoken, he was going to call out his coach, he'd be even more outspoken. I do wonder if this is something he could have potentially played through.
Oh, no
and
question.
All of them were like, you know, what's the point?
No question.
You know, like we're bad.
Yeah.
Let's give Brandon Allen a chance. I do think they would love to get a look at Drew Locke, who they drafted in the second round, the kid out of Missouri, who's
right.
a really good quarterback, and maybe one of the steals of the draft. At one time, he was projected to be a first rounder. He dropped into the second. He's having thumb surgery, or he had thumb surgery. Oh. He's supposed to be back soon.
Right.
I think that's probably what they were trying to do was keep Flacco until then. Because if Brandon Allen goes out there and plays well, then it kind of puts you in a weird spot. We've seen that happen at a lot of teams with later round picks all of a sudden play well. I just don't think this team is very good, so it's not going to matter that much. Something to keep an eye out for sure for the Broncos moving forward. The Browns, I like the Browns when they made the trade for Odell.
Yeah.
Slowly backed away to the point before the preseason. I said, you know what? If this doesn't go well, this is a team that's going to implode. I think you're starting to see some concerning red flag types of comments come out of this locker room. Baker Mayfield was at the podium after the game. He was saying, hey, we got more discipline. And I think that was shots fired at Freddie Kitchens.
Right.
Whether he knows it or not, I think that's the way it comes across. Now, Odell Beckham Jr. comes out with comments post-game as well and says, quote, I just felt like we didn't challenge as much as we could have. I think we kind of shied away from it. I was expecting and looking forward to it. But that wasn't the case today. We had a couple plays, but for whatever reason, we didn't do as much challenging as we talked about. Other than whatever came my way, pretty much I caught. Whatever opportunities I had, I made the most out of them. I don't love this. I don't mind you calling out your coaches. What it does feel like, and I don't love this, I'll be sensitive to your case. He's more like, hey, it's not me. And I don't. When your team is losing in a team game, I think it comes across really poorly if you say, I did everything I was supposed to do. It wasn't my fault that we lost.
Yeah, I have a difference of opinion,
right,
oddly enough. I do think him saying, like, by the way, I caught everything thrown to me was a little bit. But generally speaking, I think what you have here is a guy that's just frustrated with the situation. And you know, it's kind of what I said about the Houston Rockets and if that having to go well early for people to stay on the reservation. If you wanted Odell Beckham Jr. and the Jarvis Landrys and the Baker Mayfields of the world to not be like chirping at this point, it needed to get off to a good start, right? Like a guy that's used to getting balls thrown to him, you know, I don't 75% of the routes that he runs, and you're going to only target him on 24% of the routes that he runs, which is what he's getting targeted now.
Right.
You better be winning for him to take that dip in percentage of balls thrown to him, right?
Right.
Like, there are 50-some-odd receivers in the NFL right now who have been targeted more than Odell Beckham Jr. That's lunacy. So, again, if you're going to ask that dude to do that, then you better be winning games. And if you're not winning games and the recipe that you've laid out for him and the team isn't translating into wins, guess what he's going to start talking about?
Right. Not getting the ball.
Give me the ball.
He has the almost identical targets, catches, stats that Jarvis Landry does on the other side of him.
Yeah.
He's a better, like, you should be, Jarvis Landry should get his.
Sure.
But Odell Beckham should be emerging at this point in the season as the clear front runner for how many targets you're giving to him. I'll say this in defense, possibly, of Freddie Kitchens. The weather in that game was nasty.
Okay.
Maybe some of the deep shot plays they had dialed up for Odell, they shied away from, and they didn't want to get as aggressive. But that's on Freddie Kitchens then to go back to the playbook and say, all right, well, let's get him some short passes.
Yeah. Like,
they don't have to be long passes. You have to have somebody holding accountable the coaching staff saying, and keeping track of how many touches Odell is getting, how many targets Odell is getting. And if you're not there after, you know, the first quarter, all right, let's make sure, let's make a concerted effort. Let's get Odell involved because he is that type of player.
And you signed up for that.
Yeah.
And you should know that. Like, there's a track record. Okay. So when you sign up for something like that, you have to make the plan to deal with something like that.
Yep.
Here's what we're going to do, bro. To your point, Danny, look, I need you to check in with me every quarter and let me know what's up.
Yeah. Like, and coaches have entire staffs, offensive quality control coaches, lowest on the totem. Like, he does the scout team cards and doesn't do a whole lot. Give him that job on game day. Make him feel really important because he will. And he can get in there. It's not a lot. You just have to get in his ear and say, hey, got to get Odell. We're at 8 touches. We need to get to 12 before halftime. Like, something along those lines they have to do.
I would say that I actually liked the way that he kind of handled it, because it wasn't like overtly like, get me the damn ball. It was just kind of like, we had a game plan. We shied away from it. I didn't understand that necessarily. And I really liked the way Freddie Kitchen handled it, where he came out and said, look, we got to win football games or more. You know what I mean? Like, so he's not going to really address it. So, but they need to get on the same page and they need to figure that out.
Yeah, they do. Quickly too, or else it's going to implode. Yes. Like I was saying, Odell wears some sweet cleats.
Yeah.
During the game, he had his cleats on and he had special goat editions made with real goat hair with a little goat symbol on them.
Yeah.
And then you know what he did afterwards? I'm going to pay homage to the greatest of all time and gift these to Tom Brady. If I'm Baker Mayfield, I don't know how I feel about that.
Why not? This is quite possibly the funniest picture I've ever seen.
Yes, we have a picture up on CBS Sports HQ of Odell handing the cleat to Tom Brady. Brady's face is like, this is the greatest gift in the world. But right behind him, Baker Mayfield is looking on, and it's like the meme of the guy, the girls, and they're watching. Like, there's two girls, and the guy's holding hands with one, and the other girl's like the jealous ex-girlfriend.
Yeah,
like
daggering him with the
Baker
eyes.
Is the jealous ex-girlfriend right here. And I think deservedly so.
Well, this is hilarious. and on a lot of levels. Like, the fact that OBJ is paying homage to the GOAT by giving the GOAT his signature shoe.
Yes.
Is hilarious in and of itself. Can we agree to that?
Yes, we can.
You're not like giving him, you made him an OBJ shoe.
Right.
Like, exactly. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes. You'll see the jersey swaps a lot of times.
Right.
But he's going, I don't know how I feel about this one, actually. I don't love it from the perspective of it's a competitive, but it's after the game. I don't know.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I guess I don't have a problem with it either. I think it's hilarious that Baker's looking
hilarious
at him, and Baker's like, what the heck is going on right here? But I think even Baker Mayfield would be willing to look on and say,
you talk about a camera snapping at the wrong time.
Exactly.
I don't remember. Position. Wasn't the weather bad in that game? Like, wasn't it raining? Wouldn't those,
he didn't oh, wear yeah, those. He didn't wear those in the game.
Yeah, but right, even I think he's just standing out there in the rain with goat hair shoes. Like, if I'm Brady, I'm like, these are gross. Like, I don't know how goat hair reacts to rain, but it looked like how disgusting it smells out there.
Yeah, or how it smells on them, too. I don't know how that would be. Pretty sure those will go up in Brady's museum with all his other trophies.
Hilarious.
Gifts he's going to get. Maybe it's a sign that it's the last
You know
year.
What? Like, what's the equivalent of that? I mean, that would be like,
well, NBA players.
Kawhi,
right,
it'd be
shoes?
Like, no, but this would be like Kawhi Leonard, right? Who's a really, really good player, young though. Gifting LeBron a pair of Kawhis.
Yes, exactly.
Like, you're like, okay.
Well, you know what's true? And you just made it. Like, cause I was going to say it's New Balance. It'd be one thing if they were both Nike, but Tom's Under Armour.
No, it is
and
like
they're different.
LeBron
brands.
Would be like, okay, bro. Right? Thanks.
Like, damn, these New Balance are ugly. You wouldn't like those at all.
That's hilarious.
Maybe we'll have to feature those on our shoe showdown. We'll gift each other a pair of shoes.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
Welcome back to Kennell and Bell. So a lot of offseason movement in the NBA, including Kyrie Irving moving to the Nets, the Brooklyn Nets, with Kevin Durant. Obviously, Kevin Durant isn't there. So Kyrie Irving is going to have to carry a lot of the workload, which he has been doing. They're off to a 1-2 start, not because of his poor play. He had 50 in the first game, missed a potential game winner. Yep. Second game, he hit a game winner. And the third game, they lost by one in a game which he still contributed a ton. Nonetheless, ESPN's Jackie McMullen came out with a piece talking about Kyrie Irving's mood swings and how they are, quote, an unspoken concern and make the Nets, quote, queasy. This is the quote from the article where she references it. When Irving lapses into these funks, he often shuts down, unwilling to communicate with the coaching staff, front office, and sometimes even his teammates. Nets team sources say one such episode occurred during Brooklyn's trip to China, leaving everyone scratching their heads as to what precipitated it. There's hope that Durant will be able to coax his friend into a better frame of mind. You spent some time with Kyrie.
Did you witness this? Let me talk about Kyrie in a second.
Okay.
Let me first talk about the Nets.
Okay.
What in the hell are you doing? What are you doing talking about the man and his moodiness four games into the season? Like, you just got, like, don't do that. This is one of those things, like, again, you know what you got. I just talked about it with Odell Beckham Jr. Like, you know who Kyrie is. Don't start talking and leaking information like that so that it starts hitting the media and we wind up with a Boston situation again. Like, you just watch that play out. So that's number one. Number two, yeah, Kyrie can be a little moody. So could I. I was a moody player. The difference between me and Kyrie, aside from Kyrie being like way, 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 way better than I was ever, was that his lasts a little longer than mine did. Like, I was kind of day to day.
Right.
Kyrie can get into a little bit of a funk. And that's a real thing. But again, you knew that. Like, if you're a team and you're taking on personalities, you have to account for them when you're going out and you're putting your teams together. If you're not doing that and trying to, like, project what this could look like and what are the potential, like, you know, pitfalls if things go – if you're not doing that, then you're not doing your job right. Sean Marks and company there are fantastic. I played with Sean Marks. He came up under the, you know, Greg Popovich and R.C. Buford school there in San Antonio. And I know he's brilliant at his job. He's navigated it great. Brooklyn is a viable thing. I talked to my buddy. He was opening night in the Barclays. He said it is an absolute event. Like, everybody's on fire there. Kyrie is going to be Kyrie. It doesn't matter where you put him. You had to know that coming in. And yeah, he's moody, Danny. What else you want me to say about it?
Right. It's interesting because when these articles come out, like, this is obviously a well-researched piece by Jackie McMullen that came out just, it looks like, last night, 12:20, it was released on ESPN.com. But she goes into a deep history, like a deep dive of Kyrie's relationships in the NBA. I wonder if she got these quotes, like, before the regular season started. Because why are you talking about Kyrie?
Sean Marks needs to, hey, listen, everybody in my office.
Right.
Everybody in here. Get in here. Get in here right now.
Right.
Listen, if I find out that any of you all are going to the media and leaking the way we feel privately about Kyrie, you're fired.
Right.
We're not going to start
this cornerstone.
We're not going to do that.
Right. And if anything, this has kind of derailed what has been a successful start.
Dude.
Because he has the game winner. He gives his dad the jersey. He's talking to the fans. He's obviously in a good mood place right now. Why would you risk alienating him and putting him in a bad one once he reads something like this?
And you know, Danny, I'm with you 100%. You watched, wasn't this, but you watched a public kind of falling out of love, if you will, last year with Boston. You remember?
I'm signing
in Boston. Want to be here.
Yep.
Then it starts to play its way out in the media. You know, Kyrie doesn't like the way it feels. He doesn't like the way people are approaching him in Boston. They get sideways. Before you know it, I'm out of Boston.
Right.
You know that he has no problem saying, you know what? I don't like this. I'm out.
And you know what's going to happen? This happens with my daughters.
Yeah.
I have three of them. They get moody sometimes.
Right.
Do you know what makes it worse when I say, what's wrong? Now the New York media is going to go to Kyrie and they're going to say, if he's quiet, if he yeah. looks, what's wrong?
Yeah, correct.
Are you okay? That's and that's going to make him that? Worse. It's
because
make
again,
him
I am moody. Right. And I hate it when people are like, yo, bro, what's up? I'm like, bro, just let me be.
Exactly. You'll let snap me, out of yeah, it. Yeah, and that's right. what I'm starting to learn that with right. my daughters. Like, just let him be. My wife will be like, just let him alone. They'll snap out of it. But the more I like pester him,
yeah.
the worse it gets. Oh, and that's what I think you should worry about
so
if you're
bad.
The Nets.
So bad.
That something like this would make that worse. The Warriors, who started off really bad, all of a sudden get their first win of the season.
There was no Drew Holiday and there right? was no Derek Favors. So can we qualify it with that first?
We could qualify
that.
They
still got to win though.
Absolutely. And that right. should matter. I think what was more interesting was that Steve Kerr came out and said he doesn't want to turn Steph Curry into James Harden. Have a listen to Steve Kerr after the game.
Part of you that wants Steph to maybe just shoot, you know, 16 threes, 17 threes in the spot.
I just, you know, I don't know that it's that simple.
Yeah.
You know, we could turn him into James Harden and give him the ball every play. That's really hard to do. And you have to build a team for that, too. Houston has put, you know, five shooters on the floor for years now with Harden to give him that space. We don't have that. That kind of personnel. So there's not the same spacing. And that kind of basketball wears you out, too. You know, especially for a guy who's 180 pounds like Steph is. So I don't think the answer is just, you know, run a million high screens. We don't really have the personnel for that. And I don't think it makes a ton of sense from Steph's standpoint.
Interesting comments. Yeah. Do you think it's going to bother Warriors fans that the Warriors kind of seem okay with where they are? You know what I'm like? They can do this because they're so secure, right? They've got
yeah,
the championships.
Got a lot of equity now.
So they're like, you know what? We're not that good this year. I think that would rub some fan bases the wrong way. I'm okay with it. I get it. But as a former, like he's a former player. You can
yeah.
tell. Like, and players, I think, handle losing better than fans do.
Yeah, for sure. So I think a Warriors fan, if you've been listening to like Steph and Draymond, they don't seem like good with the losing.
Right.
You know? So I don't know that you'd be like turned off as a Warriors fan so far. Like I said yesterday, like this team, it stinks for them that like they're always going to be targeted like the Warriors from 2 years ago or the Warriors from last year. And they're not that same team. So they've got to try to figure this out without pieces on the fly, still getting everybody's A game. Like it's just going to be tough. I do agree with Steve Kerr. Like, there's personnel that's put around James Harden to do what James Harden does. They've been built differently. And James Harden physically is a different kind of body than Steph is.
Yeah.
So, you know, just asking Steph to purely do what James Harden does and play like that isn't fair to Steph, you know, or the team. I do think that Steph has to be, you know, more involved, maybe get more shots up. I said that Draymond has to take that next step. Last night, he was fantastic. He doesn't have to score 28 points a game. But unfortunately for him, he's got to live almost in the triple-double space for them to have chances to win games, you know, because mm-hmm. there's not enough around them. And then, you know, D'Angelo Russell has to be a consistent number two scoring option for that Golden State Warriors team. But turning him into James Harden isn't the recipe for success there, for sure.
Joey, what you got on Steph?
Yeah, I think it also – it just kind of sounded to me like, you know, to that same point with Kerr is just like a coach that – sort of knows that this season that they're not going to be super successful. Steph Curry's 31 years old. And that they still have a window to potentially be successful in the future
sure.
when they get Clay back and when Looney loses a little bit of that weight that you could see he put on from the injury and when they get maybe another piece in there. And I think he doesn't want to come out because the fans are so used to them winning and say, look, guys, we're just not going to win this year and we're going to rest Steph. Like in Miami, they put Goran Dragic on the bench. And Spoelstra came out and said, hey, we're trying to extend his career. And if he plays all these minutes, his career is going to end sooner, but we need him. I don't
right.
think Kerr can come out and say that about Steph because they're still expecting Steph to
be
Steph.
Because he's Steph Curry
right.
and you're comparing him to Goran Dragic.
right.
I love Goran. No, but I understand
I'm not
the sentiment.
Him.
No, no,
yeah,
no.
You know
I understand exactly what you're saying. Like, in a perfect world, like, if there were no, like, marketing implications or season ticket implications or Adam Silver calling you asking you what the hell are you doing implications.
Right.
You probably sit Steph Curry.
Right.
Like, because you're on pause right now as a championship window team. You know, like, yeah, we're all competitors. We're going to go out there and win games. And I applaud those dudes coming out and saying, hey, we're not good right now. We got to figure this out. But the reality of it is you're not winning anything this year. That's on pause.
Right.
So why not pause like their careers for a little second and save the legs? You know what right. I mean? But you can't.
And I bet they do that as the season unfolds. I have a hunch that they will. I think Steve Kerr, I think you'll see a minute still drop off. Maybe not entire nights off, but I think you'll see some of the minutes start to diminish through the season as they'll start looking at the bigger picture. I think Steve Kerr is that type of coach. I think he is a player-friendly coach, being one. I think they will take some of that work.
Well, I mean,
they just, I don't think they'll be as obvious.
There's a lot at stake, though. I mean, those guys are still playing. You talk about like contractually and maybe even like incentive-wise. And yeah. I don't know that. I mean, you're talking about people still want to be first-team All-NBA if they can. Yeah. Like those guys are, you know, they're, you're talking about those apex predators. Sometimes they're bragging rights on the line. So like, I don't know that Steph Curry's signing off on 20 games down the stretch. You saying, hey, man,
right?
You're going to play 15 a night now. We're right. going to just, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah,
right. It's true. I don't know.
A lot of implications for sure. We'll keep you up to date on that. Welcome back to Kinnell and Bell. It is, we don't get to talk a lot of UFC.
Yeah.
But as I said, we got one of the best, one of the GOATs, Hall of Famer, Rashad Evans. What's in up? Studio, we're going to talk some UFC. What's going on?
Not much, man. Just enjoying the day.
So there is big news in the UFC with Conor McGregor announcing that he wants to fight again. But that's not as big as you having a comeback.
What?
So you are what? 40 years old. Yeah. When was the last time you fought?
It was about a year and a half ago.
Okay. And you were going to hang it up, and then now you're deciding to come back? Or how does that decision process work out?
Well, I did hang it up, and I retired, had a Hall of Fame thing for the UFC. And then, I changed my diet, my last year, and, it just completely changed my body. Like, I really retired because I couldn't perform the way I wanted to. I felt as if, like, my knee was an issue. I had two ACL surgeries on my knee, and it just never felt the same again. I didn't have the confidence in my knee anymore. And it kind of affected me mentally, so I didn't perform the way I could have. But ever since I changed my diet, my knee started feeling better. The inflammation went down, and I'm able to train the way I used to. And then, along with that, my mindset about fighting changed as well, too. So I'm just like, feeling kind of good. Let me at least get one more.
All right, but now you're talking our language, because both Raja and I are fighting the dad bod.
Yeah.
So I want to know some of the secrets of this diet. Struggle. Like, did you go paleo? No. What's the secret to your diet? Like, what was the change?
So I'm a fruitarian. Plant-based diet, but mostly fruit, it's completely changed my body. When I first started, I was like, I don't know if I'll be able to stick to it. But then once I got over that hump, once I got over that detox feeling and that feeling of feeling weakness, then I started feeling really, really strong. And then I noticed that when I went to the gym and trained, I was training with guys who would be in the gym training every single day, and I would be able to push it as hard as they can, if not harder. And I'm just like, man, this is very weird, because I never, ever had this happen before. But and I kept getting stronger and stronger, and I'm just like, man, I gotta see, I gotta keep on with this diet. And, my body's just completely turned around. Like, I don't have to lift weights or nothing like that. And I stay ripped.
Okay. We're supposed to go on, and I know we gotta talk about Conor, but damn it, we're gonna stay here for 1 second. Cause I've been a vegetarian for a long time. I've never tried fruititarian?
Yeah, fruit. So
yeah, no. Can you just walk me through, like, what's a diet? Because you train a lot. You're talking protein and things that the body's going to need, right, to rebuild that muscle. What's a day of a diet look like?
So I do a lot of smoothies. I do a lot of, like, a bunch of fruits. Mm-hmm. And I do, but they all have to be complementing fruits. I don't put too many contradictory fruits together, because then it'll mess up your stomach. But I put like fruits together, and I put them in a blender, and I do most of that. But when I'm not doing that, I just have something always to snack on, and then I'll even eat some vegetables and stuff too. The problem when people go plant-based diet is that they go too much vegetables. And the truth of the matter is that even though we can eat vegetables, that's not the human preferred food, because we don't have enough enzymes to break down all the fibrous food that's in the greens and vegetables.
Right.
And it doesn't give you that full feeling, because it's not the carbohydrates that you and the sugars that you need
from the fruit.
So when you have the sugars from the fruit, you get that full feeling, and then you feel satisfied.
Oh, I love it, man. Yeah, my this will be my wife's favorite episode. I'm fascinated by it too. I can do a whole hour on it.
A book to get is one by Dr. Arnold Arrett, and it's mucusless diet.
Really? Yeah. All right, cool. We got to get a better term that aren't so nasty sounding. Like, my wife will always tell me about gut health and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
We got to get something that sounds better so it's more attractive to talk about. We'll have to do another special episode on that one. All right, so Conor McGregor has announced his comeback fight. It's going to be January 18th in Las Vegas. This is massive for the sport. How big is it that he's going to come back and return? Probably one of the biggest stars we've seen in the sport.
Well, see, here's the thing about it. It's kind of massive and it's kind of not. And here's why. It's because Conor kind of put a stain on his name since he's been away from the sport with his troubles and his brush with the laws and just, you know, the accusations, the sexual assault accusations and things like that has been coming up. And you know, he did a press tour in Russia and a lot of those questions started to come up and it kind of frustrated him a little bit. So he's not the media darling that he used to be. So, I don't see him getting that push from the UFC as he was getting before. And even Dana White went ahead and said that Conor is no longer the man. Habib is the man. Mm-hmm. And when the boss says that, it you know, even though he's just Dana White, he has a lot of pull. And when he says, you know, he's no longer the man, people start to be like, yeah, you know what? He is no longer the man, you know? And then they start to change it up a little bit.
That's interesting. So when you are the man, like, you pretty much have your pick. But like, if he's starting, you know, to try to build that brand again and get back, where do you think he should start? Like, what type of fights? Who do you think he gets, you know, first out of the bat?
I think he should get a fight that it's a winnable fight for him, but it's going to be somebody who's, you know, a fan favorite, somebody who's going to, you know, be able to bring it on the trash talking side and be able to let Conor do his thing. I think that the biggest mistake that Conor made is just being away from the sport too long. You know, Conor, when he's busy, you know, he's not getting in that kind of trouble and everything like that. And you know, he's someone to watch. He just brings it, you know? So, I think somebody like Cowboy or maybe Frankie Edgar or somebody, you know, somebody who he has a better chance of doing well with. I think he's been in the deep end with a lot of guys who are on fire and has not been looking good for him. When your shtick is being that man and you keep getting beat by these guys, you're no longer that man.
Do you think we ever get the Nate Diaz 3 or a rematch with Habib? Like, that's what I think fight fans want to see. Do you think we'll get that eventually?
I see the Diaz for sure, but I think that the Habib fight is a no-go just because of where Conor went with it. You know, he got, you know,
personal.
Really disrespectful. Yeah. And the way Habib is, you know, he's a friend of mine. And, you know, there's nothing more important to him than his pride and his culture and his family. And he don't care about money or nothing like that. So
did you think Conor crossed the line going there? Because, I mean, I was fortunate enough to interview Conor a couple times at my previous job. And knowing the way he would build up fights, he would take shots at everybody. But to most of them, and I know Habib after was kind of a mess and was a melee afterwards, but to most of them, he was very complimentary after the fight. And it seemed like a part of the game, part of the promotion, part of the hype. Do you think that's what Conor was doing with that one? Or do you think that one truly got personal where it was offensive?
Yeah, he went too far. And here's why. It's like, I've been in a situation like that where I've had beef with guys with Rampage and John Jones. And I always knew to take it to a point. Even when I knew what John Jones is really about outside of scenes, I only took it to a point and said, you're going to be found out one day. And that's all I took it. I didn't put him on blast and say what I've seen him do and everything like that. And, you know, same thing with Rampage. I didn't go that extra mile because when you do that, you cross a line that is just, is not good. And it kind of comes back on you karmatically wrong, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, it's every sport though, right? Like, that's not your job.
Right.
Crossing that line with people, right? Let me ask you about the Nate Diaz Jorge Masvidal fight this weekend. It's for the BMF title at UCF, what, 244?
244.
Masvidal is a Miami guy, two big personalities. Like, how do you think this one plays out?
You know, I think it's going to be a great fight, but I think that Diaz is going to be able to get the fight because, you know, the way his fighting style is, he absorbs a lot of punishment in the beginning of the fight, but what he does, he takes your best. And then by you giving your best, you get tired. And then that's when he kicks in to that second and third gear. And it's a gear that a lot of people don't have because he's an endurance athlete. He does triathlons and everything like that. So his best gear is in the second and third half of that fight. And I don't think Masvidal has that level.
So walk me through what happened with Nate Diaz as far as the drug testing, because when I saw that he wasn't cleared, I was like, well, he's probably smoking. Remember the last fight, he's out there with his joint. He's out there promoting marijuana, and he's talking about that. So I was under that. Maybe he tested positive for marijuana. It wasn't that, though. Then he says he doesn't want to fight. Then he's cleared. Can you just walk me through kind of what happened over the last week with Nate Diaz?
Yeah, so Diaz is a pretty much clean athlete, and everybody knows that, you know, as far as, you know how he eats and everything like that. So, but what happened when he got – when he got tested and failed that test, he was so upset. Because here's the thing about it. When you saw to test you, they don't only test you just that one time. They test you the whole entire camp. So he passed every single test except for one of them. He's like, wait a minute, what's going on here? So then he thought it was some kind of, you know, somebody's messing around, you know, with it. But it turned out to be that there was something in one of his vegan supplements that was tainted, and they ended up sorting it out. The good thing about it is that they sorted it out. The bad thing about it is that they sorted it out a little too quickly, and everyone else who's been, you know, sat on the back burner by USADA, they got a little upset about it. And I can see why, because if you're going to have something, you got to make it be fair across the whole entire board. But, you know, a lot of money is online.
Oh, you're saying like the testing, the agency that tested him, they got to his sample quicker than they do other people's to try to sort it out?
They resolved the case. Yeah. They resolved the whole
thing. It usually lingers a little bit.
Years.
Yeah. Years, and they sped it up in the course of a week. Wow. So no shock there. What do you think about the title that they kind of made up just for this fight this weekend, the BMF, the baddest mother bleeper around? Do you like it, or do you think it's a little corny? Like, where do you stand on that?
I like it, and here's why. I like it because, you know, it's good to have the title fight and everything like that, but there has to be something else to get you excited for, you know, and I think that it does that. It does add a little something more interesting to it than anything. I don't know if this is going to be an ongoing thing with many other people competing for the same title. I don't know how I'll feel if that was continuing to be a thing. If that was continuing to be a thing, then I'll be like, it's kind of
a little gimmicky.
Leave it at that.
Who would you give the title of BMF to of all the guys you've faced over the years? Oh, or is it you? Are you the BMF?
Oh, man. If I'm being
honest, you're too nice with us to be the BMF.
If I'm honest, I'll say the baddest man I faced in the octagon was John Jones.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Let me. We asked you who Conor should fight and all of that, and you gave us who you making a comeback. Like, who you want?
Oh man, I don't know because it all depends on where I go. You know,
okay.
I may not go back to the UFC.
Okay.
I may go to like Bellator or ONE FC or another organization.
Got it.
Welcome back to Kanell and Bell. Danny Kanell, Rajah Bell, joined by Rashad Evans, UFC Hall of Famer. You're pretty athletic. I want to see if you can do this move. Now, that was the Captain Obvious. Athletic, but I want to see just how athletic, because Zay Jones, watch some of these clips of this from the NFL and tell me if you think this is some sort of magic. Or is this...
He caught a football.
But
see
how he gets up?
Gosh, it's like he didn't rewind, huh?
Where does the balance come from? Where does the... Like, you need some sort of opposing force there to get up as the Raiders wide receiver just...
like he just caught a ball.
Strings. It's like somebody pulls him out. All right, so they found this one from the past weekend. It's not the only one. This one may not be... How about this one when he's on the Bills?
Whoa.
And that's not like in rewind.
It looks like rewind.
Doesn't it?
Easy.
He's got to have strong toes.
What muscle is that? How do you even strengthen
it? I don't even know. This is like the old Michael Jackson trick, like when he was doing the video.
Like
he was
moonwalking.
When he would lean all the way forward. That is crazy. Zay Jones, they're saying maybe he's a wizard. There was some magic.
Might be underutilizing
his
talent.
Joey said he watched that for 20 minutes, and I was like, I couldn't really relate. I'm watching that. I could sit there and watch that for the rest of the day trying to figure out how he did that. Like,
yeah, I could either. I don't know. I would want to see him do it in person.
Yeah, sure.
To believe it. Because still,
I think
there's some Photoshop.
He must be like really, really explosive and pushing him up from the position.
Yeah. Get a little momentum quick something. And then kind of carry it through. We all have children. You have really good names. I don't know your children's names, but I think all of us missed the boat in what we could have named our kids.
Clearly.
There is a high school football player who has committed to LSU, and he has one of the best names I think I've ever heard.
It's debatable.
His name is DeColdest.
Oh, man.
DeColdest Crawford. There was a rumor that was going around that his middle name was To Ever Do It, so it would have been DeColdest To Ever Do It. That was a farce. His middle name is Juan, but DeColdest is pretty good. Like, for a football player, you better be able to bring it, though. Like, you better be a good player.
He's going to LSU, so he's pretty good.
I mean, but just imagine the pressure he had his whole life. You know what I'm saying? He better been DeColdest. He better have went to LSU.
Right. Like, exactly.
You couldn't be DeColdest and not be successful.
And not be DeColdest.
Right. Like,
who's that boy? That boy DeColdest.
I know. Right? Exactly. He just has that all the time. So I told my wife already texted her this morning. I don't think we're having a fourth child. I would love to, but my wife is the one who has all the say in this one. I have three girls. I would love to have that fourth be a boy. I already told her we're going to go with the baddest.
The baddest.
The baddest canal.
That would be it. I don't know. That one might stick out at school a little bit in that situation. We were talking about, we saw the Bills highlight there when Zay Jones used to play for them. You're a Bills fan. Are you like all in part of the Bills mafia?
Oh, yeah. I cried. I mean, I cried at every Super Bowl and everything.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So it runs deep.
Deep.
Danny's been killing them, bro. He said they didn't play nobody yet. I'm just saying. I don't know.
Don't discuss amongst yourselves.
Listen. I mean, we hanging in there, right? We got the toughest team in the AFC. We're hanging in there.
Oh, the toughest team in the AFC. Well, I mean,
we're behind the toughest team.
Okay. I got you there. No doubt about it. They're definitely legit. Did you play football growing up?
I did, yeah.
You did. What made you go into UFC, into fight camp?
After we lost our last game in the sectionals, I was like, man, I got the MVP that game, but it just wasn't enough. And I was like, man, I can't be on a team sport anymore. I want it to be, if it's on me, then it's on me.
I have a little guy, my youngest. It's really like talks about boxing. He talks about doing different kind of like, you know, MMA stuff. He's a fan. His my brother-in-law is a huge MMA fan.
Oh, yeah, you got to bring him by.
Yeah, I will. I appreciate that. Where should he start? Like, what type of discipline should a young kid start?
Is it grappling?
Yeah.
Yeah. Grappling is the most fundamental and it's the safest. You know, you're not taking those big shots, but at the same time, you know, everything leads to the ground and it's the most confident builder of all time, because if you know how to wrestle, you can, that's the foundation of any sport.
That's why I want to get my daughters into some sort of discipline. Physically, I think it's great, but also the confidence factor.
Yeah.
What it brings, discipline, but the confidence to say, hey, I can carry myself. And I can't only imagine like what it's like to be going one-on-one with somebody in that situation. Like I think it's the craziest, baddest, like I have the most respect for you guys for doing that. Cause it's one thing to be in a football team. Like, you know, you get out there and you get hit, but to know it's either me or you and one of us is not walking out of this ring potentially. That's like in that mindset. Do you shift? Cause you're like, I love talking to you cause we're having a great conversation. Do you shift mindsets 24 hours before the fight? Is it a week before the fight? Is it an hour before the fight? What do you do as you prep for a fight?
It's different phases. I switch, you know, when it's, you know, week 8, I have one phase of mindset. You know, and then as the weeks progress and get closer to the fight, my mindset totally, you know, shifts and it gets, you know, more withdrawn and more into myself. And then I started to get more of the mindset and more of that, you know, that mindset I need to be inside the cage, because I can't step into the cage and fight, because the way I am right now, I'm not a fighter. But when I go through that evolution through training camp and everything like that, I start to harness that mindset. And then on fight night is the most nervous, you know, you get the most nervous, because that's when, you know, what's going to happen tomorrow. There's no going back. It's going down. So that's where your mind has to be really tough. And I've seen a lot of fighters lose the fight, you know, the night before the fight or in the locker room, just because mentally they couldn't get themselves ready.
You talk about you evolve, like you can't fight as you today, right? So like as you go through camp,
right,
do you like what happens with the family and stuff? Do you have to like kind of dissociate because you become a different person to some degree, right?
I kind of get a little bit. I mean, I always have love and
for
stuff
sure.
like that, but at the same time, it's kind of like, I kind of get a little bit more withdrawn just because of the fact that, you know, they can't go with me, and I just kind of gotta keep myself hard, you know?
Yeah.
I love it.
That's what's up, man. That's interesting.
I'm glad we got the friendly Rashad. I don't know. That's with the BMF for sure. Thanks for joining us, man. We'll have to do this again.
No problem. Absolutely.
We'll be back tomorrow here for Canell and Bell.
Yeah, that's what's up. Appreciate it, man.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents.
Here's where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back. About to set it up. New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10/9 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.